سيدنا محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Monday the 18th of October 1999. Last week we completed Surah Al-Fatiha. Allah. And today we start with Surah Al-Baqarah. But before I proceed, are there any questions pending from last week's discussion? Especially on Ihdina Surat Al-Mustaqeem, where we discussed the concept of Surat Al-Mustaqeem. Surat Al-Ladina Na'amta Alayhim, Ghayrim Mardubi Alayhim, Wa Nahtarim. Those are three stages. Part of those who are guided, part of those who are not, and part of those who are confused, are lost. Right? Any questions? No questions. Good. Today we go to Surah Al-Baqarah, which is the second surah of the Holy Quran, and it is the first surah to be revealed in Medina after the migration of the Holy Prophet. Surah Al-Baqarah is amongst the first surahs that was revealed in Medina. And overall theme of the surah is to have a harmonious society, a society that lives in harmony, that knows its rules, what are the rules, social rules of marriage, of inheritance, of, you know, dealings with each other, the general, how a society should live, how an individual, how do you identify, what are the different kinds of people, all these things are there in Surah Al-Baqarah. It also starts with what we call Huruf al-Muqatta'at. Huruf al-Muqatta'at are broken letters. That means these letters do not join together to form a word, but they are recited in its individual letter form, as in broken, not alama. It is not alama, it is alif, lam, mim, right? So, Muqatta'at are broken. And these are called broken letters because they are not combined together in recitation to either form a word or be recited as one word. They are broken. Now the use of these broken letters, Huruf al-Muqatta'at, in the Holy Quran, are so many. They have been used so many times in different surahs, the beginning of different surahs. And I will not discuss this now because, for the simple reason, Ayatullah Tamatamai also doesn't discuss it at this stage. He says, he discusses it at Surah Shura, which is Surah number 52, I think, right? So he discusses the concept of Huruf al-Muqatta'at at that stage. So what I will have to do is to read that, and probably next time or sometime later, we'll get the tafsir. But I do know one thing, that in Majma' al-Bayan, Tabrasi, he writes about Huruf al-Muqatta'at, that there are 11 different theories, 11 different theories by Mufassirin, as to the use of Huruf al-Muqatta'at. That this is a possible explanation, this is a possible explanation. And so doing, he has listed out 11 different possible explanations. Right? And there are so many different, 11 different ones. But the secret is, nobody knows. I know Sayyid Kamal Haidari, the person who gives the lectures on Tafsir, he himself says that he believes that Alif Lam Mim, right at the beginning of such an important surah, was to show to the people that look, Alif Lam Mim are three very important letters of the Holy Quran. And they also indicate, like I would say ABC. Now ABC does not have some meaning itself, but ABC will tell you that these are letters of the alphabet. And ABC will tell you XYZ as well, in the sense that I am using, giving you examples of three common, most important, widely used letters, Alif, Lam, Mim. And above all, Allah is trying to show us that using the same Alif, Lam, Mim that we use in our ordinary day-to-day language, same Alif, Lam, Mim, He has compiled this book. This book is not using any other letters or any other language. It is using the language that is composed of these very letters that you know, Alif Lam Mim, right? So there are many explanations as to the usage of this particular, these particular letters, broken letters. Except why did Allah Subhanahu wa Taala put this? Is a different story. Nobody knows. And you'll find possible explanations, very many.
When you say nobody, you mean nobody or only no. Aima or
Imam? Nobody is in Ghair al-Aima. Aima is the Holy Prophet and the Imam is not.
Would there be other people like some of our ulama?
No.
Nobody.
According to the Majma al-Bayan, all these 11 are probable possible explanations. And therefore, even, you see, the Imams have not pinpointed this, no. There's no reference. Hadith will give you this. One possible explanation, another possible explanation, third possible explanation. The beauty of Majma al-Bayani is that Tabarsi has written down every possible explanation from which hadith they have got. Okay, this possible explanation has been derived from Ibn Abbas, for example. This possible explanation from Sa'id, for example. You see, the given names. So, all these possible explanations have come from hadith. It's not like they have concocted it or they have come to the conclusion, no. It's been something that they have derived from hadith, right? An interesting, I think one of us sitting says, Alif, Lam, Mim. Alif is for Allah, Lam is for Ibrahim, and Mim is for Muhammad. So, Alif, Lam, Mim, this message is from Allah, Ibrahim to Muhammad. I mean, these are the possible Mufassirin have tried to decipher what could Alif Lam mean.
That's very basic, isn't it?
Sorry?
That's a very basic explanation, isn't it?
It's very. That's what I said. Different Mufassirin, based on their kind of tafsir that they do. Right? Take this. One hadith says that the kafirs, you know, the mushrikeen in Makkah, is to put the wax of wool in their ear, not to hear the Prophet. Right? So to draw attention, the Prophet would say, Alif Lam Mim. So they'll say, what is this? And then the words will come over. Right? Now, I don't know whether that is a true hadith or not. It is there in the books. Right? In any case, Muqatta'at is Musallam and Al Jami'ah. Everybody agrees that Huruf al Muqatta'at is something that we can only try and decipher and give possible explanations. Right? ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابُ لَا رَيْبُ فِيهِ هُدًى لِلْمُتَّقِينَ. Notice the three dots before فِيهِ and after فِيهِ. The alamatul waqf, the three dots before فِيهِ and after فِيهِ. Right? You know what that means? That means you can stop at either of the two, but you can't stop at both of them. You can stop either ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابُ لَا رَيْبَ فِيهِ هُدًى لِلْمُتَّقِينَ, or you can say ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابُ لَا رَيْبَ فِيهِ هُدًى لِلْمُتَّقِينَ. Right? And both these readings would be correct.
By stopping at one, not the other, and then stopping the second one. If I say La Rayba Fi, and then if I read it as Fi, would there be a difference in meaning?
No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't. But
at all, wouldn't it be something like, this is the book, there is no doubt. Okay? And then it would say, in it is a guidance to those who.
No, but La, you see, La Rayba Fi is there is no doubt in it.
That is another way?
You are adding a word now. Meaning, ma. You see, there are two things. ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابِ, that is the book, لَا رَيْبَ فِيهِ, there is no doubt in it. هُدًى لِلْمُتَّقِينَ, so it is an adjective of the book, it's a guide for pious people. Right? Or you say, لَا رَيْبَ فِيهِ, ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابُ لَا رَيْبَ, that is the book, undoubtedly the book. فِيهِ هُدًى لِلْمُتَّقِينَ, in it there is guidance for the
meaning.
Well, the fihi is attributed to different things. Fihi is the doubt.
Like putting a comma in the wrong place.
Ah, yes. You see, you can put a comma anywhere. Yeah. That's the thing. But you can't. But you can't repeat. Like by repeating, you're putting fihi again. Now that is an addition. an extra word, right? So read it anyway, whether the, you see the thing is, can doubt and guide. One aspect, there is no doubt in it, that is the book, Kitab. And in it is guidance, alayhi salam, for pious people, which is in the book again. Right? Now, interesting questions. This is the way we start tafsir or tadabbur. At the moment you recite this verse, what are the things that comes to mind? Abu, can one of you recite the English translation? What does it say?
This is the book. There is no doubt in it.
Sorry?
This is the book.
This is the book.
There is no doubt in it. It is a guidance to those who safeguard themselves with full awareness of divine rules.
You are just pious for that last one.
Sorry, what does it say? This is the book?
This is the book. There is no
Everybody's guidance. Translation says this is the book.
This book.
Huh?
This book.
This book can't say Dalika.
I have said this book, there is no doubt in it. It is a guide to those who guard.
It is not Hadal Kitab.
Then it should be
that book. Dalika. Atlu Arabic. We know this little Arabic. Hada is this. Dalika is?
Yeah.
That. Dalika Kitab. That is why I'm surprised, ki English ma, but then again in this case, it is referring to this book, barabar shi, I agree, it is referring to the Quran. But the what do you call, pointing has been done as if it is something far. Dhalikal kitab, la rayba fi, there is no doubt in it, hudan lil muttaqin, a guide for the pious.
Here it explains, dhalika refers to something distant. But in Arabic, sometimes it is also used to indicate a highly revered object, even if it is close at hand. I'm a commentary man.
Commentary man. Zalika refers to a distant object.
But it can also be used to indicate a highly revered object, even if it is close at hand. And here it carries on to say, whether translated as this or that, it refers to that which is in our hands.
Refers to that commentary which is in our hands. Yeah. Nice pun. ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابُ لَا رَيْبَ فِيهِ Arabic in the that, ذَلِكَ I don't know, I'm not sure about this usage of something that we reveal as in ذَلِكَ, as in something distant. But there is an explanation. Okay, why did Allah choose ذَلِكَ? Distant. Right? And the explanation, which has evidence in this very ayah, right, which we will go to, the explanation is that Dalika is referring to the distant, underlying, hidden meanings of the words of the Holy Quran. The Holy Quran has one meaning, that is the apparent meaning, the external meaning. There are internal meanings. And this internal meaning is the meaning that is referred to in this particular verse, Dalika al-Kitab, the one that you have to dwell deeper. You have to dig deeper to find. Okay, what is the meaning of this verse? Now, evidence for this interpretation, that Dalika is referring to the deeper meanings of these verses of the Holy Quran, is found in the very verse that says, ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابُ لَا رَيْبَ فِيهِ هُدًى لِلْمُتَّقِينَ It is a guide for?
The
muttaqin. Right? Question. If I am a pious person, if I am doing what pious people do, I pray, I fast, I give zakat, I go to hajj, I do all these things, what will the Quran guide me for? Is Quran not a guide for somebody who doesn't fast, who doesn't pray, who doesn't give alms or zakat, doesn't, is not a believer? Is the Quran not a guide for him? This one says Quran is a guide for the pious people. That means this guidance that it is talking about is a secondary guidance. It is not a primary guidance. The primary guidance should have brought us to that level of piety to be called muttaqin. And then the secondary guidance is derived from the verses, but not from the overall meaning, I mean the apparent meaning of the verses, but the internal. Do you understand? So it's a much variation. Hudan lil muttaqin. It is a guide for pious people, right? And muttaqin alladhina yu'minuna bil ghaib wa yuqimuna as-salata wa mimma razaqnahum yunfiqun. These are the attributes of pious people. But if to get there you need guidance. So then this guidance that it is talking about is a secondary guidance. It is not the primary guidance. It is the kind of guidance that we look at the Surah Al-Hamd. There are two kinds of guidance. One is to show you the path, but after you have chosen to tread that path, the other guidance is now to hold your hands and take you to the ultimate aim, to the goal. This is your path. So once we establish ourselves on the path of piety by praying in time, by having faith in the unseen, by giving alms from what Allah has given us. Once we have established ourselves on that path, then the Quran is saying, ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابِ, that is the inner meaning of these verses, are now a guide to take us closer to Allah. That is the meaning. That is why ذَلِكَ has been used and not هَذَا الْكِتَابُ لَا رَيْبَ فِيهِ. Otherwise, in the Holy Quran, many times the word used is هَذَا إِنَّا نَزَلْنَا هَذَا الْقُرْآنِ. We have revealed this Quran to you. Right? So the hidayah that we are talking of is a secondary hidayah, because remember, to get to taqwa is the first hidayah. And then we go to the second hidayah. So this Quran, the internal meanings of the Quran, the external and apparent meanings of the Quran are for the first hidayah, where people want to believe, do not believe, and want to believe, we learn from the Quran. When people who do not pray, want to pray, we learn from the Quran. When people who do not believe in the hereafter, learn from the Quran, recite from the Quran, and believe in the hereafter. So there is that apparent first primary guidance. Then you become a mu'min or a muttaqi. And from taqwa also there is another hidayah. From taqwa also there is another hidayah that will take you closer to Allah, that will take you to the ultimate goal. That hidayah is what Allah is talking about. Huda lil muttaqin. Right? Now, very interesting. That in another verse, I forget the exact location of the verse, but I'm sure you have heard of the verse, that this Quran is hudan linnas. It is in the Quran. That this Quran is hudan.
Hudan linnas wa bayinati.
Ahsan. Hudan linnas wa bayinati min al-huda wa al-furqan. We cite this in the month of Ramadan. It's a verse from the Holy Quran. Hudan linnas. That means it is a guide for mankind. So why at one stage Yahudan linnas and another stage Yahudan lilmuttaqeen? One answer is that Dhalika al-kitab la rayba fi. Dhalika is referring to the internal meanings of the verses of the Holy Quran. The secondary and deeper meanings, not the primary meanings of the Holy Quran. This is one explanation. Why the difference between Hudan linnas and Hudan lilmuttaqeen? Number one, because it is referring to the deeper meanings, ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابِ. Second answer was given by Ayatollah Jawad Abuli in one of his Friday sermons, or in his class in Qum. He says there is no difference between the verse. An-nas is referring to people, ordinary people, but people who are alive. And there are verses in the Holy Quran that points out that, just trying to remember the verse, which says that is a dead person, same as a person who is alive. Right? Now, a dead person receiving guidance, is he the same as a person who is alive? That is the verse in the Holy Quran. Now, that person is not dead, because a dead person does not receive any guidance. That person is alive, but because he does not follow the guidance, he is as good as an animal. So he is not from the nas. It is like the verse that says أُولَٰئِكَ كَالْأَنْعَامِ بَلْ هُمْ أَضَلُّ سَبِيلًا, that these people have eyes that do not see, have ears that do not hear, and have hearts that do not understand. They are like cattle, or they are even worse. Right? These are not people. There may be people in the external form. There may be human beings in the external form living and talking like we do. But when it comes to Allah's eyes, the way Allah looks at things, Allah will look at them like animals or even worse. And therefore, they do not fall under the category of Nas by the criteria laid down by the Quran. So they do not fall under the criteria and under the category of An-Nas. And therefore, An-Nas and Al-Muttaqoon, that is Hudal lil-Muttaqeen, are in fact, Ayatullah Jawad Amuri says, one and the same. That it is only when you come to this basic stage of taqwa, where you have iman for ghaib, when let's get one thing very clear about this. Now when we talk of taqwa, we do not mean the high stage of taqwa. Taqwa itself has stages. We are talking of the basic, very basic fundamental stage of taqwa, where in taqwa you need to do these three things at least that is described here in this verse. أَلَّذِينَ يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْغَيْبِ وَيُقِيمُونَ الصَّلَاةَ وَمِمَّا رَزَقْنَاهُمْ يُنْفِقُونَ.
Right.
وَالَّذِينَ يُؤْمِنُونَ بِمَا أُنزِلَ إِلَيْكَ وَمَا أُنزِلَ مِنْ قَبْلِكَ وَبِالْآخِرَةِ هُمْ يُوقِنُونَ أُولَٰئِكَ عَلَىٰ هُدًى مِنْ رَبِّهِمْ. These are the signs of a basic muttaqi, very primary. And to be that, at least in the eyes of Allah, we have to be a human being. We cannot be somebody who shuns away guidance, who turns away from truth, who turns their face away from their, evidence of what is right and what is wrong. If we are amongst those, then Allah has classified us amongst animals. And therefore, whether it is hudan lil-nas or hudan lil-muttaqeen, it is one and the same. That's the observation that Ayatollah Jawad Amri makes. Right? Muttaqeen is no different from us. Right. Any question? Nah? Muttaqoon has been quantified, has been explained by the very verses that followed. Right? الَّذِينَ يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْغَيْبِ وَيُقِيمُونَ الصَّلَاةَ وَمِمَّا رَزَقْنَاهُمْ يُنْفِقُونَ وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا بِمَا أُنْزِلَ إِلَيْكَ وَمَا أُنْزِلَ مِنْ قَبْلِكَ وَبِالْآخِرَةِ هُمْ يُوقِنُونَ أُولَٰئِكَ. He's referring back to the muttaqun. أُولَٰئِكَ عَلَىٰ هُدًى مِنْ رَبِّهِمْ وَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْمُفْلِحُونَ. So these are the, this is a very liberal translation of taqwa. And what he has done is to look at taqwa separately, not from the verses that follow. If you look at taqwa in light of the verses that follow, you begin to understand that the taqwa that Allah is talking here is the basic taqwa and not the highest level of taqwa. It is very easy to make huge translations, mind you. It is very easy to say, okay, Muslim is somebody who surrenders to the will of Allah, says La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah. Right? But that Muslim is not that on the stage. Because you know, Prophet Ibrahim was called a Muslim. Right? In the Quran, Allah calls Prophet Ibrahim a Muslim. So what? Was Prophet Ibrahim a Muslim like one of these Muslims that we have on the streets? Or is there a difference between that Muslim and the Prophet Ibrahim's Islam? Forget that Muslim. Difference between my Islam and Prophet Ibrahim's Islam. There has to be a difference. And therefore Muslim is more than just that stage of saying La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah. That is a basic level of Islam. That is a very basic stage of Muslim. After that you go higher into Iman and Taqwa and then you end up again being a Muslim. Where there is total submission. Right? So, it is very easy to make translations of or give definitions of these terms. But we've got to realize that everything has got a logical sort of meter or rather calibration. Right? where you start at basic level and then you go to a higher level and go to the highest level of every particular quality. When you talk of ilm, go higher. There is a lower level, intermediate, you go higher. You talk of compassion, you talk of mercy, you talk of anything, right? It is a degrees of intensity, right? And the same thing goes for taqwa here. Muttaqun here, muttaqin here is used as a basic level in light of these six things that Allah Himself has explained, right? Now, if you look at Surah Al-Baqarah, Surah Al-Baqarah up to verse 5, Allah describes one category of people, and that is the believers. Then verse 6 and 7, that is the category of kafirs, kuffar. So you have mu'min at one stage, you have kafir at the other extreme. And then from 7, from 8 up to from 8 up to 20, it is description of munafiqeen. And these are the worst people, and these are the people who need explaining, because these are the people who will give a different picture and have a different kind of thing at their background. And therefore Allah uses 12 verses after these 8 verses to explain the signs of a munafiq.
This is another interesting thing. The 5 pillars of Islam that Sunnis believe in, they come from this verse, but it says believe in the unseen, which could be the first pillar of Islam.
Sorry? The first pillar of Islam.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Then establish prayer, give in the way of Allah. Believe in the Prophet Muhammad.
That is the Sunni's way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They come from
here. Absolutely. Absolutely. The Sunni's need these 5 pillars of Islam, the way these things have come here in Surah Al-Baqarah. But we will talk about Ghaib as far as...
They have missed out a pillar.
Sorry?
They have missed out a pillar. There's a 6, isn't it?
Which
one? They've missed out a pillar.
Which pillar is that?
There's a 6th one, eh? To believe not only in what Rasulullah brought, but in those that before him.
So Allah uses only 5 verses to explain the signs of a mu'min. Uses only 2 verses to explain the signs of a kafir, the attributes of a kafir. And uses 12 verses, right, to explain those of a mu'min. For it is like that thing that says, God, my enemies I know. Save me from my friends. My enemies I know. Save me from my friends, because my friends are those who will come in front of me, declare their friendship to me, but I do not know what lies in their hearts. It is these that you can protect me from. And Allah, right from the beginning of the Holy Quran, you will find it in so many places in the Holy Quran, that Allah continuously explains the Holy Prophet the truth about hypocrites. The kafirs are very easy to identify. And they are very openly saying, we are kafirs, we don't want anything to do with this. Keep away from us. It is these munafiqs who come close, they claim the belief, and then the damage that is from internal, from within, is much more damaging than anything else. That is why Allah uses this portion of the verse 20, maximum chunk of it, explaining the
You say that, and you describe it as a vice, but have you heard this book, The Art of War?
The Art of
War. There's a Japanese equivalent, and one of the things he has in there is, if you wish to destroy your enemy, first become his friend. Know his ways, and in the moment of his weakness, destroy him. And this is a virtue.
That is a virtue?
Yeah. This is a guidance for you, how to destroy your enemy. So this is a Japanese equivalent. It's the Book of Five Rings. It's the same sort of thing.
Very interesting. They have learned it, huh? They have learned Ayurveda, learned care, then teach whatever. It's how to fight enemies effectively.
No, but what Islam tells you is this is the description and it's wrong. They say the same thing, this is the description, but it's a good thing. Master it. Can you see the difference I'm saying?
Islam says it is wrong when it is used against Islam.
It's also wrong for you to use it.
Why not?
To do the same thing the kafirs, the munafiqs are doing, we should do the same thing?
Of course.
Really?
Yeah, this is an interesting thing.
I'm not sure, but you should know your enemy.
Yeah.
I don't know about becoming his friend.
But not behave like him.
No, behave like him, but...
To say, I'm your friend, a Bashat Imaran.
Ah, what was Ali ibn Yaqtin?
I don't know Ali ibn Yaqtin.
Sorry, Ali ibn Yaqtin was the wazir of Harun al-Rashid. I think Harun al-Rashid. During the 7th Imam, right? He was the wazir, the prime minister. People used to tell the caliph, this guy is a Shia. And he tried to find out whether he's a Shia or not. He was, you know, taqiyat al-Mubad, he was a Sunni. Right?
Imam
Bakhshi
was a Sunni.
Absolutely. Imam wrote to him, when he asked Imam, how do I do Urdu? The Imam wrote to him to Urdu in this manner. That was a Sunni way. And he was doing that Urdu because he followed the instructions of the Imam. But he did that Urdu because they were watching. And Imam knew. The timing was so perfect. They were all watching him. And then they finally said, I'm a Sunni, so the way we did Wudu, right?
That's different from what he's saying.
Yeah. What is he saying?
No,
one thing you call Taqiyya, one thing is Munafiq the other way. Is it not?
No, but Munafiq is one purpose. Your to destroy you. A Taqiyya has one purpose, a person with Taqiyya has one purpose, to save himself. The difference between me lying to save myself and lying to destroy you.
There is a difference. Awesome.
Can you use it to destroy? Can you use it to save Islam? To destroy the enemy of Islam to save Islam?
Well, that would be jihad, isn't it?
But in a sort of undercover or devious or inverted communism.
Like justice, intelligence services and all that.
Spy, double agent.
Would it be allowed or not? Everything would be measured according to the overall level. Need for it to save Islam. If there was a need for that kind of course of action in order to save Islam, then it would be
saved. Is it even that? Because you can argue that it's not your job to save Islam. Your job is to do the right thing. Allah's job is to save Islam. You have to make sure that what you do is the right thing. Not to lie, not to cheat, not to swear, not to...
I think there's some possible things that I would disagree with. To lie, to deceive, to fraud, right, at the expense of individual loss is not right, obviously. But at the expense of loss to either enemy of the Islamic State, right, or to a tyrant king, then it would be allowed. So there is a line that has to be drawn somewhere.
And also the niyyah. Because so many of us believe that it's okay to steal from a mushrik or a munafiq or whatever.
I know.
For personal gain, you can't.
That's not for Islam.
So it's so bad.
That's selfish. That's not to say Islam.
It has to be now clarified. You can't do it.
You can't do it.
It's been clarified.
What about things like...
But you have that in the money salah.
Interest from banks, whereby the banks are using that money that you put to help against Muslims.
First of all, if you know that the bank is definitely using that money for those kind of things, it is around the world. Right?
If generally...
Generally banks, sure. You can't pinpoint that they're doing that. But...
Governments, but the Munafiq governments were.
Munafiq government. Define.
Tanzania.
No, define Munafiq government. Saudi Arabia, for example. Okay, Islam, you know, they claim they represent the true version of Islam, yet they don't. In fact, on the contrary, they persecute good Muslims, right? Would they be, say, the government of Munafiq? No, eloquently,
jolly, raja, chili. It's not their money.
So you can't steal from them for your personal gain regardless, right?
It's not their money in the first place.
Not jolly, not paying taxes, perhaps, and so on and so forth. Not
this deal.
No,
blatant stealing. 14
billion.
So there we are, next
to so there is an argument. Some people have put an argument in here. Why should we pay government taxes which are not Islamic when we should really pay Islamic taxes?
The answer is very clear. Listen, the answer is very clear. You give government taxes because you are living in the land. To expect services from the land, to the nation that is ruling the land, right? The government that is ruling the land. You need to make it survive by paying taxes. And then you have to pay taxes. Islamic government, neither you cannot defraud anything. But see, Islamic government, whether it is a true Muslim government or not, is immaterial. Because at the end of the day, those taxes will go towards a government that is catering for Muslims. And any loss, however negligible that percentage may be, is only going to end up or result in depriving a Muslim from services. Some of them may be basic services like medicine, right? And therefore, it is not allowed at all. Right, let's go on, please. الَّذِينَ يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْغَيْبِ وَيُقِيمُونَ الصَّلَاةَ وَمِمَّا رَزَقْنَاهُمْ يُنْفِقُونَ. Those who believe in the unseen. Many of the Mufassirin have said that this unseen is referring to the time of our 12th Imam, where we believe he is in ghaib, right? But I just wish to narrate here an incident which many of you may have heard, a story that many of you may have heard, a hadith from the Holy Prophet. Once when he was sitting with his companions, he said, Salamullahi ala ikhwan, that peace be on my brothers, the Holy Prophet. So the companions immediately asked him this question, Awalasna ikhwanuk, are we not your brothers? Qala la, he said, you are not my brothers, bal antum ashabi, you are my companions, and by that name you shall be known up to the day of judgment. Which is a fact. Nobody will call Abu Dhar brother of the Holy Prophet, everybody calls him a companion. So, you are my ashab, and by that name you shall be known up to the day of judgment. Faman hum ikhwan, who are your brothers? قال الذي يؤمنون بالغيب. This very verse. The Holy Prophet said, it is those who have faith in the unseen. قال الذي يؤمنون بالغيب. So the companions, still wanting to be labeled as brothers of the Holy Prophet, argued with the Holy Prophet and said, Ya Rasulullah, ونحن نؤمن بالغيب. We also believe in the unseen. We believe in Allah not having seen him. So the Holy Prophet said, but aha, you believe in Allah. I am talking about the people who will believe in Allah not having seen him, who will believe in me not having seen him, and who will believe in their Imam not having seen their Imam. فَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمْ إِخْوَانِ وَسَلَامُ اللَّهِ عَلَىٰ إِخْوَانِ. Those are my brothers. Those who have faith in Allah, in me, that is in the Prophet, and in their Imam, not having seen any. So it is not, the companions were thinking that they had done a great thing by bringing faith on Allah without having seen Allah. Because they were all better than the Jews. The Jews had asked to see Allah. Right? So we have brought faith in the ghaib. The Holy Prophet drew the attention. And true, one particular remark that has been recorded in this story, as it is recorded, the one particular Ashab stood up and asked this question, Ya Rasulullah, Awa yakunu dhalik? Will there come a time when there will be people who have faith, who will have faith in Allah, you and your Imam, not having seen any? And the Prophet said, Bala, there will come a time. And those are my brothers. So it's obvious that we have been elevated a stage. High. provided we are true to the truth. Right? Okay. Whatever good we do, based on conviction, based on our faith, based on our belief, we will have more reward than those who have lived in the presence of the Prophet of Allah.
Good question.
Argue. How can I say that?
It doesn't necessarily mean us. The fact that they saw the Prophet should not make, or rather we haven't seen the Prophet, should not make him live, should it? Why should he not?
Arya, this one, just think for a minute. If the Holy Prophet, forget the Holy Prophet, the Imam, our Imam, if he was present amongst us, living with us.
Yeah.
Right? Or anywhere else. Or think you were living with him. Would you be the same person now?
Let me put it this way. That argument, I agree with you if you said that the guidance which we are getting at this time is different from the guidance we would have got at that time. Mm. Is that correct?
How do you think people like Salman, Radwanullahi alayh, Abu Dharr, Al-Qadar, Ammar Yasir, right? These are names of very highly revered and pious companions of the Holy Prophet. How did they get to that stage? By living with the Prophet.
Prophet's presence.
By living. But the condition was Prophet's presence khalini. The condition was they were ready to practice word for word what the Prophet taught. Otherwise, Prophet's presence was with 200,000 people. Was Abu Bakr not close to the Prophet? Was Umar not close to the Prophet? They were also close to the Prophet. Why didn't they rise to that stage? It's because these people decided and implemented what guidance the Prophet gave.
Can I ask you a question? You may accuse me of whatever. But you said that why did these people, Abu Bakr and Usman, did rise? Presumably you plan like Abu Zar and those people. Is it reported anywhere that this is the stage for those people and those people?
Good question. I have judged.
Did you understand what I judged? Yeah.
I have made a judgment.
You have made a judgment.
But I'm checking. Yeah. That is your question. Yes. Okay, I have made a judgment. Obviously. At Pluto in my passage. Check it out. Ajay, if you tell me.
I'm just saying that you have made a judgment, but I don't know whether it is historically reported anywhere.
On what basis?
Historically. Nah. Historically, Hadith Machiye, ke Salman minna Ahlul Bayt. Salman is amongst my family, the Holy Prophet has said. He has not said this for any other company.
Just Salman.
Right? That is why Salman Farsi is often referred as Salman Muhammad. You will find the name Salman Muhammad being referred to not only in lectures but even in books. Right? To show that he was not Ajam, because Farsi is Ajam, you know, the non-Arab. Right? So to show that he was an Iranian. There's no doubt about it, but because the Prophet took him. Now, the Prophet has said that Imam Ali has said, I'm not sure, that Salman reached the 10th stage of faith, Iman. Abu Dharr al-Ghaffari, the 9th stage. So, this shows a difference even between the stages of Abu Dharr al-Ghaffari and Salman Farsi.
How many stages?
9 to 10.
How many are there?
10.
Only 10.
Highest stage of Iman.
We would be like number 1,
I expect. Well, if we are
the
one.
Well, we've been in another.
1, 2, right, inshallah. So what I'm saying is, okay, by making a statement, okay, Abu Bakr would have been the same. Could have been, right? But there is a difference, and there is a difference. The very fact that Abu Bakr had the audacity to take that khilafat after the Holy Prophet showed that he had no faith. or something was lacking in his condition. Chicken.
Some of the comments that I've Umar, what he said,
That question was questioning because lack of understanding of the Holy Prophet. The true leader, true status of the Holy Prophet, that how that leader was, the Prophet was a leader in such a way that whatever he said, he never joked, he never lied, he never got sick, he gave guidance. Every word of his was a guidance. That's what you understand. Based on the lack of understanding or deliberate distortion, he asked for a paper. He said this narrative in a Rajul al Ayam Jufra. He's ranting or rambling, yeah? So this is Iman bil Ghaib. Iman bil Ghaib, Ghaib is classified as the unseen. Now, why in this hadith, Ghaib is classified as Allah, the Holy Prophet, and the Imams? There is more than that. Al Ghaib has everything. Al Ghaib includes, for example, the way Allah's system works. When something happens, do I know the wisdom behind that action? I don't know the wisdom. Is Allah testing me? Is Allah punishing me for my sins? Is Allah rewarding me for my good deeds? I don't know the wisdom. The wisdom behind every action from Allah, every reward or punishment, is something that I don't know. But to have faith on Allah, to have faith that Allah would only do what is best for me, is also faith on the unseen, the intangible. So ghaib is not just the Prophet, Allah, the Imam. It is everything to do with our belief, everything. Today, actually, when we talk of the inner meanings of the Holy Quran, these are also the intangible meanings of the Holy Quran. To be able to picture within, to visualize within our minds that there is something more than just this physical world. To be able to do that is to have faith in the unseen, that intention. Right? So what is asked for taqwa is to be able to have that faith in the unseen. Something that we cannot see, something that we cannot hear, and yet have continuous or total faith. الَّذِينَ يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْغَيْبِ وَيُقِيمُونَ الصَّلَاةِ وَمِمَّا رَزَقْنَاهُمْ يُنْفِقُونَ وَالَّذِينَ يُؤْمِنُونَ بِمَا أُنْزِلَ إِلَيْكَ وَمَا أُنْزِلَ مِنْ قَبْلِكَ وَبِالْآخِرَةِ هُمْ يُوقِنُونَ. Again, the choice of words here, quite interesting choice of words. وَبِالْآخِرَةِ هُمْ يُوقِنُونَ. The word is not وَبِالْ مؤمنون or يؤمنون. There is a difference in having belief and having يقين. يؤمنون is from the word يقين. وبالآخرة هم يؤمنون. And about the hereafter, وبالآخرة هم يؤمنون. They are definite or certain about it. That means every action of ours, every word of ours, every deed of ours reflects on our belief. If it doesn't, then we have failed to get to this stage of taqwa, which is the primary stage of taqwa. To get to this primary stage of taqwa, it is easy to say we believe in the unseen, we pray, we give zakat or khums or whatever taxes that are wajib on us, right? Then we have faith on what the Prophet brought and the messages that came before. We believe in the Bible, in whatever came before our Holy Prophet, right? And Akhirat, we believe. You will have yaqeen. Yaqeen would only mean that certitude, that certainty would only come if it reflected on every action. Ulaika ala hudan min rabbihim. Those are the people. Now, hudan lil muttaqeen, ulaika ala hudan. So why? If the Quran is a guide for these people, and Quran is saying these people are in guidance, what is the use of the Quran? See the question? أُولَٰئِكَ عَلَىٰ هُدًى مِّن رَبِّهِمْ وَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْمُفْلِحُونَ. Right? If the Quran says that these people are on the guidance, then why did they say that the Quran is the guidance for them? If they are already on guidance, then they don't need a guide. Again, the answer is quite simple. This guidance out of two different kinds. Now the word that says Ulaika ala hudam min rabbihim, these are the people who have received the primary guidance to be brought up to that stage of the Quran. And now they use the Quran to dig deeper and understand Allah better, to get closer to Allah. So much better, again, so much better.
You were talking about Hudan lil Muttaqeen, he was saying Hudan lil Nas, and it's the same thing.
Yeah. He was saying the Muttaqeen and the Nas are the same people. Right? Here.
What I am saying here,
this Huda that is used here, the word Huda that is used here, Ulaika ala Hudam min Rabbihim, right? This word Huda and the word Huda that is used in the first verse, it says Hudan lil Muttaqeen, right? Are these the same two Huda or are they two different? The first one says this book is a guide for believers or muttaqin. This one, this verse, 5 verses later or 4 verses later says Ulaika ala hudam min rabbihim. So there it starts, this book is a guide for the pious people, lists out who are the pious, and then it says these are the people who have received, who are on the guide, on the right path, who have been guided. So then, why is the Quran a guide for people who are already on the guidance? That is the question.
For the afterward, being after the Muttaqeen, that there are rules and laws to follow in the Islam to change.
To go higher.
Higher.
Right? That is the first hidayah. That Quran, the Quran, Dhalika al-Kitab, the inner meanings of the Quran are to guide people, to guide the pious ones, to guide those who are already acquired. Isn't it? It's like you finish level 1, then only you can go to level 2. You can't just jump to level 2. You get to level 1, where you are a practicing mu'min, you have faith on the unseen, you are praying, you are giving zakat and all these things. So you are on the guidance, you have received guidance from Allah, you have reached level 1. Then the Quran, the inner meanings of the Holy Quran, are now a guide for you to go higher to level 2 and level 3. This is what is meant by these opening verses of the Surah Al-Baqarah. This is about the Mu'mineen. This is about the one group of people who brought faith, who believed in the Holy Prophet, who are practicing Mu'mineen. And when it comes to Kuffar, those who are not ready to believe, those who despite all kinds of guidance and all that are not ready to believe, innal ladhina kafaru sawa'un 'alayhim a anzartahum am lam tunzirhum. These are gone cases. And gone cases that have been mentioned in the Holy Quran are many. Kufar. See, you will not guide them. You will not be able to guide them. Because these people, they simply will not believe, right? So whether you guide them or warn them, أَمْ لَمْ تُنْذِرُمْ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ خَتَمَ اللَّهُ عَلَىٰ قُلُوبِهِمْ وَعَلَىٰ سَمْعِهِمْ وَعَلَىٰ أَبْصَارِهِمْ غِشَاوَةٌ. Right? It's a very interesting verse here. The question is, that did Allah see that blindness in them? If Allah did, then of course anybody on whom Allah would seal would always be a kafir. But why did Allah seal it on them and not on me?
Because He knew that they are never going to accept it. Their hearts were totally
closed.
The guidance is, you know that last week you were explaining
Sorry?
Last week you were explaining the And so there's two types. One is open to everybody, and the other one is
for the children.
Yeah. Allah Ta'ala, which is the second one that is sealed off to everybody. The second one is sealed off to
everybody. Second one is sealed. No, we're talking about the kafirs. Because the first one is sealed. We're talking about the kafirs, we're not talking about the munafiqs.
Yeah,
right? We're talking about the kafirs. That means these people who have not even brought the primary faith in Allah.
Faith is still open.
It was still open until Allah says, these are the worst kind. خَتَمَ اللَّهُ عَلَىٰ قُلُوبِهِمْ وَعَلَىٰ سَمْعِهِمْ وَعَلَىٰ أَبْصَارِهِمْ غِشَاوَةٍ.
Logically, at some point in their life, Allah would trust that. He wouldn't have done it right in the beginning. At some point in their life, Allah would do it.
There's some kafirs who become...
At some point in their life, sorry?
Allah would then put a covering on their heart.
Why?
Because they reach a point of no return.
Okay.
I'm suggesting.
You can't be from the beginning.
You're getting closer, huh?
You can't be from the beginning because there's some kafirs who become Muslim.
Who become Muslim? So that means...
Well, maybe the covering that's put on them isn't final. Maybe even after the covering is put
Allah,
on them.
Allah uses very interesting words here. Khatam Allah is to seal it. Seal. You know the seal? Seal comes at the end. Conclusion.
Right.
Right? Khatam Allahu ala qulubi. So he ends it with that. Now, end is point of no return. Right? And it would mean that there is a prelude to that. There is something before that. Like you said, it must be at some point in life, a point of no return. Now, to get to that stage of point of no return, this person must have done things. Right? The most important indicator in this particular verse is خَتَمَ اللَّهُ عَلَىٰ قُلُوبِهِمْ وَعَلَىٰ سَمْعِهِمْ وَعَلَىٰ أَبْصَارِهِمْ غِشَاوَةٍ. غِشَاوَةٍ is translated as a veil. Right? This veil was not planted there by Allah. This veil that is blocking sight of truth is not planted by Allah. It is created by man himself. What Allah does is that after that point of no return, Allah says, let this veil stay now. This veil will never be lifted because of what you have done.
Was this ayat even for Abu Sufyan?
Abu Sufyan, Muslim,
he was
sleeping. Huh?
Khatam
was
sleeping.
I'm very glad.
Abu Sufyan. So, is this, are you happy with the answer? It is a very, very deep.
Happiness. If you reach, even Shaitan apparently has not reached the point of no returning, that he is able to turn back if he wishes to. There was a hadith where Rasulullah tells him, if you want to be forgiven, go and do sijda. I've heard that. I don't know if it's true or not.
Yeah.
Go and do sijda.
You haven't heard the end of the story, right? But he asked to Shaitan,
he turned around and said, if I didn't do it when he was dead, why should I do it when he's... If I do it when he was alive, why should I do it when he's dead?
No, Shaitan didn't plan that. He was going, Jata to Siddha Kara, but Umar was not my way. And I get to my Jew to the Arab Kara, I was Sukaris to Jaja. This is a story, probably get it, but.
Do you think that would be fabricated by a Shia?
Of course. No doubt about it. You heard that story of the dream, no? Where a person dreams, they're standing up in front of a Muslim clerk, I dreamt last night. What did you dream? I dreamt, the Prophet, Day of Judgment, Prophet says, where is my first caliph? You and your people enter heaven. Second one, you and your people enter heaven. Third one, you and your people enter heaven. But Jannat full, house full. Fourth one, I dream, Imam Ali Islam, I dream, sorry, house full, Jagannath Jannat. This was a Sunni anti-Shia speaking. She asked of them, what? I dreamt the same thing. But you didn't read the last bit. I read the last bit. What was the last bit? Ye the last bit kya ni samera mama ne sam samera ki there is no space to no jage khaybar no lo chala le jannat ne upari chala hi bane le jana there are kind of stories that are fabricated by Shias.
But the one I'm talking about, there was this no mention of Umar or Abu Bakr. There was no mention of Abu Bakr or Umar, the one I was talking about.
No, no, the story that you're saying, the Prophet, Shaitan ne ki khuda maaf kar se tu ja, first of all, that is not true.
No,
it goes against the principle of the Quran totally.
No, no, he didn't say khuda maaf kar se. Olu pehla ki do, if Allah's rahmah is infinite, does it extend even to me? And he said, if you wish, if you think you want to be forgiven, do this. He didn't say you will be. He said, do this. And then he was not prepared to do that. Then that was the answer was that the limitation is not with Allah, it's with you. But that's the way I understood it.
You see, the concept of action, of deeds, and this is what we say, خَدُمَ اللَّهُ عَلَىٰ قُلُّهُمْ وَعَلَىٰ سَمْحِهُمْ وَعَلَىٰ أَرْصَارِهِمْ وَرِشَاوَ. Right? It's the concept when we talk of iradatullah, that any action I do, is it from me or is it from Allah? The verses that we read are not contradicting, but somehow conflicting. We read verses that say that everything is from Allah. وَمَا تَشَاءُونَ إِلَّا أَن يَشَاءَ اللَّهُ رَبُّ الْعَالَمِينَ. Right? Everything is happening by the intention of Allah, by the will of Allah. So what is the role of Allah? In guidance, in good deeds, what is the use of reward and punishment? If everything is from Allah, what is the use? I think I'll take the next 15 minutes just explaining. Again, it is an interesting concept that has to be understood very clearly in our mind. The school of Ash'ari and Mu'tazila, you've heard this name, Ash'ari and Mu'tazila, yeah? These are schools of thought that developed as this concept of studying philosophy and Allah and Tawheed developed during the time of the 5th and 6th Imam. These two schools of thought developed as well. The Ash'ariyas, they say that everything is from Allah. Everything is from Allah. That means good and bad. Anything that I do, anything that happens to me is from Allah. Right? They give evidence from the Quran using those verses. إِنَّمَا أَمْرُهُ إِذَا أَرَادَ شَيْئًا أَنْ يَقُولَ لَهُ كُنْ فَيَكُنْ. So whatever he wants can happen. وَمَا تَشَاءُنَ إِلَّا أَنْ يَشَاءَ اللَّهُ رَبُّ الْعَالَمِينَ. You have no control, whatever he wants will happen. Now, they developed this school of thought, and they were the first people to start. I'm not talking about the knowledge that the Imams left behind. I'm talking about those people who left the Ahlul Bayt and they were developing their own form of Tawheed. They developed this first, that look, Allah, it is only Allah in control. In response, in direct reaction to this school of thought, another school of thought, the Mu'tazilites, who were closer to the Shia, they said, no, there is something like Adl al-Ilahi. Adl al-Ilahi is justice. When Allah is just. And therefore His justice demands that He will only punish when necessary. He will only reward where it is deserved. And therefore, this thing is on the human being himself. Whatever he does is his choice. Total. Right? So that was the other extreme. When they came to the Imam says, لَا لِجَبْرَ وَلَا الْخِيَامِ إِنَّمَا الْأَمْرُ بَيْنَ الْأَمْرَيْنِ. So it actually is a third thing that is in between the two. It is neither total compulsion nor total freedom. So whenever we do our action, there is neither total compulsion nor total freedom. Now, this may sound very rosy as far as the words are concerned, but let's look at irada, will. Allah wills and I will. Are these two wills the same? Number one. Number two, whose will take prevalence in implementation, in execution? When that thing happens, whose will works? Mine or Allah's? Right? And number three, how do you explain these conflicting verses that are there? Allah's will prevails, right? If Allah's will prevails, then why will I be punished if I do not properly? Will are of two kinds. Now when I talk of will, I mean irada, are of two kinds. What is called as irada takwiniya and irada tashra'iya, right? Irada takwiniya is the will in which Allah has created the system. The system in which every action has a reaction, and every cause has an effect. That is called irada takwiniya, and that is how Allah has created things. When I say things again, like last time, I'm sure you remember when I talk of amal, it includes actions, it includes words, it includes thoughts, it includes deeds, everything, right? Similarly, when I talk of things, it includes actions. If I light fire, fire will burn, right? This effect will take place, لا يتخلف ولا يختلف. That means, لا يتخلف ولا يختلف. That means that invariably the same effect will take place, and inevitably the effect will take place. Inevitable and invariable. So, these two things. When I light a fire, it will definitely burn. The effect will take place. And then secondly, when I light fire, once I light a fire it will burn, and once I light a fire it will freeze something. Will that happen? It can't. It will definitely burn. So, inevitably and invariably, the same effect will take place when fire is made available with the conditions right. Now, the conditions are, there must not be an obstacle like water around, for example, or the conditions are, there must be a good amount of oxygen around for the fire to burn, and so on. If the conditions are conducive and the fire takes place, then the effect will invariably and inevitably take place. This effect is in a system that Allah has created, and that is irada takwini. That it has been His will that fire will burn. He has created fire, will burn. And why not fire will freeze? Because simply He has not created. Now, He creates an action which is irada takwiniya, right? He creates an apple to be eaten, which is irada takwiniya. An apple will always be eaten by us. But He then imposes on it His irada tashri'iya. That means, now, if this apple is stolen, don't eat it. If this apple is yours, eat it. The action of eating has been created by you. Now, I have the choice whether to eat a stolen apple or not. The act of eating is the same. It is the act of eating that has been created by Allah. Had Allah not created the act of eating, would I have been able to eat? I would have. And therefore, the act itself is a creation of Allah. And I can only do it because the act was created by Allah. My control is on the tashri'iyya, that is it jayaz for me to do or not. Now, if that act was not created by Allah, I wouldn't have been able to do it at all. Ayatullah Khuri in his Tafsir al-Bayan gives a very good example. And he says, if you want to understand the interpersing of roles of Allah and a human being, right, in an action, try and understand that if you had, for example, a hand that was paralyzed, yeah? Your hand is paralyzed, you can't move your hand, right? Then, you go to this, what do you call it, where you get a mechanical arm. Now you have a mechanical wrist. This mechanical wrist runs by electricity, or wire, kahraman, right? with batteries and wires. Now, the batteries run out, there is no electricity, this thing will not work. Right? But if there is electricity, it will not work until you press the light switch. You control what you want to do. Right? You want to fold your fingers, you want to raise your arm, whatever it is, you control. But at the same time, if there is no power, whether electricity, battery, whatever it is, if there is no power in that mechanism that has now been placed in your hand, you will not be able to do it. So is the power doing the action? Power is not doing the action, you are doing the action. Right? So once the power comes in, now you have the choice to do it or not. Yet, you know, without that power, you will not be able to do it. That is the understanding of the merging of roles, or rather, when we talk of iradatullah and iradatul insan, that insan cannot do things without Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah has created these things. Right? Allah created these actions for them to be done. Mind you, irada taqwiniya, right, which is where Allah has created action. The questions go even deeper. Just ask your simple question. If a fire burns, if I light a fire, it burns. Does it burn every time with the permission of Allah? Or does Allah hold back and say, away? What is right? That's the main argument. And that is why fire is used as an example, because the example of Prophet Ibrahim is there. Ya naru kuni barda wa salam ala Ibrahim.
Allah still has the
control. Well, that was that question that we had the other week, but we didn't answer it.
Okay.
That every particle exists and continues to exist by the will of Allah, or has it created and left it to exist?
Absolutely. That was the question. I think it was the first classes that we discussed.
It was about 4 weeks ago. Well, I wasn't there amongst the first classes. That was in Oxford.
I think it was 8 to 10 weeks ago. But I'll tell you something. The most of the philosophers believe that, at least the contemporary philosophers who will perceive of Allah, they believe that Allah has not just left the system. We will be seeing things as if he has left the system, but everything happens under his control. He still has power over it. Everything happens after he has consented.
No, that's accepted. But for example, that every single particle of this cup exists because and maintains its existence directly because Allah wills it to exist. Do you see what I'm saying? As opposed to he created it billions of years ago and is here now. Although he has a power over it.
So the difference? Is there a difference? Whether he has or not?
Well, I mean, obviously there is a difference, but is that difference relevant? But there is a difference.
He's got the power over it.
You see, while Ayatollah Tabatabai was maintaining that every, what Safa is saying, that every time an action takes place, a cause takes place, it has to receive consent from Allah before the effect of the cause. Every time, for everything, right? He's one of the scholars who begged to differ. Very, very, very openly. Right? He begged to differ and said, look, it is not like that. It is like Allah has created a system that fire will always burn. So fire will always burn, except when Allah would then intervene, because he has the power, and say, this time, don't burn. Right? There's a difference. And that, the scholar was opposing the Ayatollah by saying, and that has evidence in the Quran, where Allah says, Ya naru kuni barda wa salaman ala Ibrahim. So Allah ordered the fire to be cold over Ibrahim. Right? If Allah had not ordered the fire to be cold, the fire would have burned. So that exception was that Allah has power and would intervene to stop the natural effect from taking place. Whatever the case.
But it doesn't say that in normal circumstances, he doesn't say, he doesn't order the fire to burn. He specifies this for me, he says,
no. Exactly. That is why this argument holds more strength, that Allah, day-to-day effects would just take place, continue, right? From the way Allah has created things. Wherever one thing he wants to stop, a particular effect of a certain cause, he would intervene, which he can anytime. I mean, the power is his ultimately. But what we must remember is that every action, every irada, right, is the kuniya first of all, and then the shaykh. This, what Allah wants from us, is that the shari'iyya, our actions, conform to the shari'iyya. That's what it is. Right? For example, give you one example. إِنَّمَا يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ لِيُذْهِبَ عَنْكُمْ رِجْسَ أَهْلِ الْبَيْتِ. Is this irada? Irada tashri'iyya ki irada takwini? You've understood the difference between tashri'i and takwini. Takwini is that system that he has set. Tashri'i is something that he asks us to do. Whether we do it or not is different. He wants us to do it. Right? Now, if we say that this irada here, إِنَّمَا يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ لِيُذْهِبَ عَنْكُمُ الرِّجْسَ أَهْلَ الْبَيْتِ, this irada here, yuridu is from the word irada, right? This irada here is tashri'iyya, then he wants that from us as well. Doesn't he want to ward off evil from us? He wants us to stay away from him. So it has to be takwiniyya. And takwiniyya is that he has set a system where he is not saying that you keep away from evil, he is saying evil will keep away from you. Right? And that is the height of accomplishment, where human being, an ordinary human being, is able to achieve so much that he doesn't have to turn away from evil, evil will be warded off from him. Vice will turn away from him. Right? That is the height of accomplishment. And that was irada tashri'iyya for all of us to be able to accomplish that. But because of Allah's ilm, that he knew that these were the people who would accomplish that irada takwiniyya, that he has created a system where vices can be warded off from us. Right? And according to his knowledge, he has seen that these people are the only people who will attain that status. So what he was saying was both irada takwiniyya and the shaykh. You see, it makes a lot of sense if you try and understand it this way. There is irada takwiniyya and irada the shaykh. Any questions?
Just going back to the first about the whether Allah is willing, you know, the normal system is permission to reach high. And I don't think there's any way that we can ensure one way or the other without maybe an imam or a couple of colours. There's no way you can say one way or the other, is there?
Yeah.
You can't. We're arguing either that for example, the fire, he gives it permission to be called, or he orders it to be called. Does he order it to burn every time, or does he just allow the system to go? But there's no real way you can be sure one way or the other.
You try and read from the Quran, from a hadith, that
there's a definite hadith which tells us that that is different.
You see, the hadith. This is only to help, and mind you, it's not going to make any difference to our
belief. You asked, is there a difference?
No.
I mean,
there is no difference.
But I would feel better believing in one than the other, and I don't know why.
Believing in what?
That Allah maintains the existence of every particle, every time, full stop. I don't know why.
Okay.
But that's the difference.
But that is the difference. Yeah, but that is not a difference in fundamental beliefs.
No, that's no, I'm saying that's right.
So there is no difference. Well, there is difference in belief, but there is no difference in our faith.
No.
Sana? That is what he's saying. This is discussed as just in Nolo also. Ilmi bahasam, scholastically.
Philosophically.
Whether it is this or that. You see, this particular, will. His will prevail. Right? Or my will. Right? Is interesting because it clarifies a lot of things in the whole Quran. The Quran is that you find both verses that say, okay, I have done things and Allah has done things. The very same things, and therefore do I attribute to things that I do to Allah? That concept is important to be clarified. We cannot have association, okay, I and Allah have done this together. Can there be any association? There can't. And therefore that difference between the takwini and the tashri'i that it is his creation of the action, and mine the choice of doing it, when to do, how to do it.
But really,
it is, I am responsible for that particular. For example, take the concept of the action of killing. That's the biology, killing, murder, right? That act itself was created by Allah. Agreed on? Right? However, the choice I have is when to kill. If I kill an innocent bystander, then I am amongst those who have wronged, and the punishment. But if I, in the name of Allah, go to war in a jihad and I kill a person, right? Have I done something wrong? On the contrary, I have done something very good. Therefore, that act has been created by Allah. How I do it, when I do it, is in my hands. And Allah has that irada tashri'iyya. From that irada takwiniyya, He also has irada tashri'iyya. Do this and don't do this. And when I disobey and say I do this, so that is the level of what you call where Allah's role comes in, as far as the action is concerned. That act is concerned, Allah's role comes in its creation. And my role is this.
Clear? I'm surprised that it's something that so many people have been arguing about. It's pretty logical. If you do something, it's because Allah has given you the ability.
Hello. Sayyid Sa'id Akhtar Rizvi in his book, God of Islam. I think God of Islam or Justice and God. One of these two books. He explains. And he gives a different example. He says, if you wanted to climb a roof, to do some repair work, right? With your limited height, would you be able to do it? You wouldn't be able to do it. And therefore, you would need assistance, right? That ladder that will take you up. So your limits are bound, like you said. Mulaini's lectures give a better example. You know that example of a man standing with one knee up and the other? You heard that?
Lift one leg and lift the other.
Right? Because Imam Muhammad Bakr is under someone else, where a person comes to the Imam and asks him, what is it, total compulsion or freedom? Total freedom. He says, neither. How do you explain this? Simple. Stand up. Raise your one leg, hold your knee. So he raises his one leg, holds his knee, right? And he says, whilst you're standing like that, raise the other leg. Will it? You want to do it. Can you do it? You can't. So the restrictions imposed are by Allah. You are like in a cage, in a box, that you can do only so much. You can't do more, even if you want to do it. Because that thing has not been created by Allah. The irada takwiniyya is not. So you can't really.
I think there is a saying of not again Islam, what good you do, what evil you do is from you. What good you do is from
Allah. How do you explain that?
There is a saying of
Muhammad. No, was saying of Muhammad, dua. I always find this point very interesting. Dua iftitahma. Ramzan Aichi. And you remember me when you recite dua iftitahma. Because at this particular spot, you say, Allahumma ma 'allamtana min al-haqq, fahamilna, wa ma qasurna anhu, fabalighna. Right? Allahumma ma 'allamtana, oh Allah, what you taught me about truth, let me be able to bear it. And what I have not learned, make me learn it. See the difference? Ma allamtana, what you have taught me. The first sentence does not say what I have learned from the truth, let me bear it. No. It says what you have taught me, let me be able to bear it. And what I haven't learned, wama qasurna, without the qasartana, not you have not taught me, no. What I haven't learned. Right. So, all good is from Allah, and all bad is from Allah. Very simple answer, very simple. Your vices and bad deeds are not creation, they are absence of creation. Try and understand. Very simple. Darkness is absence of light. So everything good has been created by Allah. Everything bad is absence of that good. So when I say wama qasurna is because all that is there, I have not learned it. Now whatever is there to be learned is from Allah. That is why all good is attributed to Him and all bad to me. Because all bad that I do is in actual fact an absence of good. It makes things much clearer.
It's also seen by the Prophet Muhammad's prophet Hill that incidents when they go together and they come across three different things. And at first, they were doing the whole work. They introduced that in himself. That
you remember that? You were there, yes.
It brings a new meaning to Tawheed, isn't it? Where there's no duality, there's only Allah, and whatever is not with Him is away from Him. And do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's like absolute Tawheed.
Absolute, absolute. Everything that emanates from Him is good.
And there is nothing that doesn't emanate from Him, it's just there's nothing.
Absence.
The absence of anything that emanates from Him. I mean,
you can't think of anything that is not coming from Him.
Does that automatically mean that everything is in the Quran?
Everything?
Is in the Quran. What is supposed to be known is in there. Or is it from here you can refer back to whatever you're supposed to know?
Yes, as you see, there is mention of such things, but there are no details of the Quran. La yamsu illa fi al-Quran, right? There is nothing to try to do what except the mention of the Quran. Does not mean that everything is in the Quran. And the very fact of how do I phrase it?
There was a very good majlis I heard about that. I mean, really, it really put things in the light. And what he said was, if you had a person coming from a past age, and he came forward in time, and he came to today, and he asked you, all these things you have, your mobile phone, your computer, all these things come from the sky.
Yes.
And you would reply him, no, of course they didn't come from the sky. They came from the earth, from the ground. He said, well, I've dug the ground many times. I didn't see these things. How would you explain to him that digging the ground is not enough? You have to process those minerals and those elements and whatever. It's the same thing, that knowledge may be in the Quran, but you need something here to dig for it and create something out of it. It's like in physics, everything can come down to two or three fundamental laws.
Sure.
But how much is there that you have to derive from it?
That is also possible.
You said that last time, that it has become well lived, that it's a guidance in it. All things regarding guidance
for the life path.
Not the things and every subject.
No, but even for example, the guidance in part of Sirat al-Mustaqim, right? Guidance, okay. My question is that, what about prayers? Simple question. The Maghrib mein qiraat rakaat chhe, subah mein deh rakaat chhe. Is that in the Quran? That is not in the Quran. But what is in the Quran? Ma aataakum ar-rasool fakhudhu wa ma nahaakum anhu fantahu. What the Prophet gives you, take. And what he forbids you, tells you not to do it, don't do it. Right? The Quran says that. That means that the Prophet's every move, every word saying do this, you do it. Right? And that is how we believe. And this is a clear verse that everybody believes. Okay, the Sunnah of the Holy Prophet is evidence on us to act according to that, because the Quran says, مَا أَتَاكُمُ الرَّسُولُ فَخُذُوهُ وَمَا نَهَاكُمْ عَنْهُ فَانْتَهُوا.
But the coming of the Prophet has made it a completeness now of what is supposed to be there. Now his argument is that there should be more processing of information of, say, if you're in the present world, as opposed to the past. Now, if you are you saying that still there is a completeness, but there is more and more to be learned?
Absolutely. From the Quran, if you look at the understanding of the Quran, say 1200 years ago, you look at the understanding of the Quran and the Tawheed, the concept of Tawheed now, right? You find the very same ahadith that were used by Imam Ali al-Islam at that time are interpreted differently. I'll give you an example, very simple example. Imam Ali al-Islam had this view. Okay, the world is like a snake. The world is like a snake. Its external is glossy and shiny and soft to the feel. Its internal is full of poison. Right? At that time, people interpreted it as, aha, keep away from the world. Right? The world is dangerous. The world is deceptive. It will deceive you, right? Whereas now, they look at it differently. That meaning is true. Now they look at it differently. They look at it as internal and external. That the concept of external and internal things to everything was started by Imam Ali. He said, whenever you look at things, look at it two ways. The external appearance and the internal truth of it. Right? So that principle is derived from the hadith. Forget the hadith that is referring to the world. But this principle is learned from the hadith that look, everything has two things to it, the external and the internal, and we have to learn the truth of both these aspects and then understand things in light of this. So these lessons are now